What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. This is the Sports Ethos Grizzlies podcast. And for the first time in what seems like a year, we have the entire crew together. It's been a crazy year for this podcast. Like we have all had different things going on in life that has kind of kept us from being a full crew most of the year. But here we are tonight. The Grizzlies beat the Nuggets at home 112-94. And I was glad to see them bounce back here because the loss to the Sixers was brutal. I planned on doing a post game after that one. It would have been me solo. And the end of that game just pissed me off and I didn't do it. And I no need to sugarcoat it. It just is what it is. The Grizzlies led that game from like 9 minutes in the first quarter, like 40 seconds left of that game and just donked it away. Let's talk about the positive game. The win, 112-94, beat the number one team in the West. I'm not going to beat them up. I'm going to try and be positive all night long. But I'm going to throw it to you guys. Candace, you've been away the longest. Welcome back. Glad to have you. And you choose what you want. I don't even have a question for you. Just let us know what you think about the Grizzlies because we haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, it's been interesting watching the team from afar. It's definitely been, I think, the definition of a roller coaster ride, or really maybe more down than up more than anything. But tonight was a good win. It was just good to see. For one, I think it was important for me to see Ja play better just because he's been playing so bad the past two games. Just to look engaged and to see the hustle and to see the effort. And that was what I, you know, was beginning to get concerned about. I never questioned Ja's effort. Like, if there's an effort thing, it's generally because it's like a back-to-back or something understandable, but just these past two games, and he just kind of seemed checked out, and he definitely had some plays where he turned it up, you know, made the hustle, made the effort to get out in transition, and made the effort a little bit more defensively tonight. So you just want to see your star players play well, and that it began to be a concern. You know, they could have had a better game from Jaren, but, you know, you like what you saw from Ja, especially. He's the one, he's the leader. And, you know, just the whole team, get to see the bench be able to make some valuable contributions. That's been an issue this season. So, good win, definitely against a great, you know, it's a great opponent. And helps them a little bit get some cushion in the standings because they were getting to the point where they were kind of needing that too.
So we saw Tyus kind of bounce back. He had been struggling before the All-Star break. Yeah. And this kind of looked like what we expect to see from Tyus. I wanted to jump in here, Isaac. And then when Isaac goes, Candace, we'll throw it right back to you. The graphic, and I know that's not tonight's game, but the defensive graphic, opponent field goal percentage with Ja Morant as the final defender, he was very, very high. I think, what was he, top three, top two? I can't remember.
Two, yeah, he's number two.
Just way up there. I was blown away by that. I didn't think that was accurate. I'm like, man, is this for real? Like, did that really happen? And so Candace mentioned kind of the effort from him on the defensive end. Because going back to that 76ers game, there were some times it felt like he was checked out, and I haven't seen that from him very much. And you would think in a game like that, coming out of the All-Star break against a championship hopeful team in the Eastern Conference, that he would be up for that game, but it felt like he just wasn't there.
Yeah, man, and I said coming out of the All-Star break, once it was revealed that Steven Adams probably wasn't going to play in either one of these two games, I was like, man, you're going up against Joel Embiid, you're going to go up against Jokic without Steven Adams. If you can get a split, I think you'd be happy with that. And they did get the split, but, man, they probably should have been 2-0. They should have gotten both of these games. But kind of your point about Ja, it's weird because if you remember going back last year, it was kind of the same thing. Around the All-Star break, he seemed to, I don't know, it's the second year in a row where just this body language, the mood seemed to be down. It was kind of like that last year. I kind of made a comment about that. Last year, he just seemed off. I mean, in the All-Star game, he's not aggressive in the All-Star game. I don't think he enjoys the All-Star weekend, if I'm being honest. Like, you see his interviews, he doesn't really want to be there, I don't think. And it's kind of carried over into even prior to the All-Star break and a little bit after the All-Star break. Even last year, you kind of saw him kind of throwing the shell a little bit, kind of struggle a little bit. And it was good to see him break out of that tonight. 23 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, steal, 9 of 18 from the field, plus 19 in 24 minutes. Only 24 minutes, man, and put up 23 points. I mean, that's really efficient tonight as well. You just saw him being more aggressive, doing some playmaking as well, kind of bouncing that tonight. It wasn't go get me a bucket job, not taking any bad shots, just getting pretty much what he got it within the offense. So I was glad to see him back. And you talk about Tyus Jones, and me and David talked about this on the last time we were on here together. I spoke about him. One of the quiet parts about their struggle, that losing streak, was Tyus' struggles. He had been really, really struggling. And to see him come out and bounce back tonight, that's definitely a good sign, man. Him going 5 of 10 from three, because he had been on fire from three. And I think over the last month, it was something bad. He was shooting like 12% or something from three over the last month, I think prior to the All-Star break. So to see him come out 50%, 5 of 10 from three, man, that's big for him. For him to get that kind of production off the bench, man. BC, another nice night for him. 8 points, 9 rebounds. And it's just a good win. I mean, they needed a win. Sacramento had that crazy win last night, moved within 1.5 games, man. You get this one, puts you back up two and kind of gives you a cushion to kind of try to hold on to that two seed. I think it's really important for this team to hang on to that two seed, especially when the landscape of the West is the teams in the West have leveled up. There's no question about that. And this team has struggled on the road. And to have that two seed and to have home court advantage, if you do advance out of that first round, I think it's going to be big for this team. So, I mean, with 20-plus games left, if they could just play pretty good basketball, I think they'll hold on to that two seed. And I think tonight's win will go a long way in doing that, man, because they got a brutal schedule this month, man. It's not gonna be easy, man. Not going to be any gimmies coming up in the next few weeks. So anytime you can get a big win like this, man, on the home floor, it's a good thing.
So are you buying or selling Ja Morant stepping up his game on the defensive end, being one of the better man? I'm not ready to crown him as one of the better defenders in the league, but based off of that graphic, you know, everybody else on that graphic, you're looking at guys that either have been defensive player of the year.
Because Jaren's like number 10 on the list. Yeah, I think Jaren was down to number 10. And I was like, man.
Yeah, I think Giannis was one. Ja was two.
Yeah.
You know, you had some very good defenders on that list. And it was like, okay, one of these guys is not like the other. It seemed like it was an outlier. So do you think that is an actual leap that we're seeing from him?
Man, I've talked about his increased effort and attention put on that end all year, but I definitely didn't think you would see that. When I saw that graphic, I was like, man, is this a joke or what is it? Like I said, he has definitely shown more effort on that end this year, but I didn't expect that. I think they said opponents are shooting 44, I think it's 44.4 percent when he's their final defender. To see him top two in the NBA, that's crazy. You can look at numbers different kind of ways, but to see him on a list like that, that's not something that I would expect. I did a double take when I saw it come across the feed. I was like, man, I went and did some research, and the numbers seem to be correct. But he definitely puts more effort on that end. I don't know if I'm buying that he's the number two defender of the league or anything like that, or defensive player of the year candidate, but he's definitely improved on that end. He's put more effort in. I think in previous years, he didn't always necessarily put in the effort. He's had an effort on the offensive end. He just kind of float out there on the defensive end. You haven't seen as much of that this year. You have seen certain games, like you talked about the Philly game. There were times where he kind of seemed to be checked out a little bit. But when he's engaged, he's been much better on that end this year. But that number was definitely surprising to see for me.
Let me give the context to that statistic. So I'm going to say that. I guess I'll go, I'm not buying it, but I do believe that he's improved defensively. So at least compared to last year. So one of the things that, and there was another graphic, I'm trying to pull it up now, but there was another graphic that I saw following that explained that I think he had like the fourth least difficult opponent guarded, right? So like they kind of hide him on defense. Now the person they hide on defense the most is Tyus Jones. Like he gets the worst defensive opponent on the team. And I think there were 3 or 4 people ahead of Ja. So Ja doesn't get the worst opponent on the team, but he does get weaker opponents, So that gives you some context. And then they're not, there are, it's, it, there are more point guards in this league that are becoming, you know, dominating the league, but there are some who are just kind of basic point guards. So I think there is some context to consider. I think the level of opponent that he's guarding makes a huge difference. I think that should be considered. So I'm not buying that he's one of the best guard, you know, defending guards in the league, because he would, I think if he played, you know, top tier point guard matchup for matchup, I think he'd get cooked, quite honestly. But he has made, in terms of his effort, there is some improvement there. And so there's a reason why he's showing up, because I think last year he wouldn't show up no matter what.
No,
I think,
no.
I think last year, like, regardless of the level of opponent, the deep, like, it would just be bad. So you're seeing some progression there, but no, I don't buy what that graphic is selling specifically.
Okay, fair enough. I tend to agree with you guys on that. That was, I just admit, I felt like it was flat out wrong. I'm like, there's no way that's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I had to go right up and look up some stuff. I was like, man, this is crazy, man.
Same thing, man. I went to digging whenever I saw, I'm like, yeah, this, it just feels wrong. But, you know, like you said, Candace said, context matters. So the opponents that he's guarding, the people that he's closing on, like that obviously makes a difference.
Yeah.
I want to bounce back to the 76ers game. We didn't do a post game there, and I said I wasn't going to hammer on them too hard, and I'm not. But I want to point out something. I saw a lot of chatter about X being in that game over BC and rotations. Like, we've been having the rotation conversation. I don't want to beat a dead horse. I think that most everybody knows how we feel about the rotations. But I cannot understand why there are not different changes made during the game. When going back to last year in the postseason, the Golden State Warriors attacked Brandon Clark. Whichever guard had the ball, they would bring his man out to screen and get Brandon Clark switched on a guard. In that 76ers game, they were doing the same thing with James Harden. Whoever X was guarding, they were bringing him out to screen for James Harden. So you could switch, and if it was X, if it was BC, they were targeting those guys. You can make adjustments to stop that from happening. Yeah, Jaren matching up against Joel Embiid in the post is not a great matchup. The NBA averages 5 post-ups in a game. It's actually less than 5. It's like 4.8 something. Let Jaren play the 5. Play Dylan Brooks at the 4 and have another guard out there so they can't just switch that, because they were getting killed. That right there, that is a fatal flaw in this team's defensive scheme that they're going to have to do something about. Or when they get into a series against a team where the talent level is equal, they're going to get beat because of that. The Golden State Warriors exposed it last year, and Philadelphia, the way they got back into that game was by attacking BC and X. You cannot let them switch onto a guard. And I love those guys. I think that they're both good defenders. But if that's what they're going to do, change it up. You know, run Luke Kennard out there. Let Dylan Brooks play the 4. Dylan Brooks has played the 4. He's guarded 5s. Like, run a smaller lineup out there. And don't play BC or X. If you end up getting killed that way, at least you tried something. But the fact that there was nothing, that I know that they see it. There's no way that they're sitting there watching this happen and they don't see it. They get paid big bucks to be in the position they're in. Somebody on that coaching staff sees what's happening, and nobody's doing anything about it. And it's driving me crazy.
So, man, I'll say this. When I last left off, I was beginning to question Jenkins as a coach. I've seen enough. I will put it out there. I will make the statement. I don't think he's the guy. I don't think, not for the team to get over the hump. He's been a great developmental guy, a great culture guy. And he is a good coach. So let's not mistake. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm saying for what this team needs and the ability to maximize talent and make adjustments, the book has been out on the Grizzlies for well over a year. I don't know that there are many teams that you can definitively point to there. This is exactly how you attack them, because most coaches have adjusted to whatever it is that their weakness is. The coach has made some sort of adjustment. The Grizzlies are one of the only teams I can think of that if you have this game plan, it works since like last year, like all of last year too. I just think a lot of teams know that. And I agree with you, David. It's going to kill them in the playoffs. The inability to adjust, it's really regressed. It has regressed. I mean, he showed some potential last year, but he just seemed so mechanical, so methodical, so much of this is my process. The Grizzlies don't need that. And you got a defensive player of the year front runner, and you can't put him on Embiid. Like, you're almost hiding him in a sort of way. And I just don't think you can win a lot of playoff game basketball like that. You can win some regular season games, but in terms of how far you're going to get in the playoffs, you got to be able to make adjustments. You just do in the playoffs. It is a adjustment type of game. And Jenkins has shown all year that that's not what he's going to do. And you have to have a lot of talent to overcome that.
X and DB are about the same size. X is 6'8", 6'9", DB 6'7". If you don't want to put Jaren guarding Joel Embiid, put Dylan on him. I'm just saying it. If that's something that they don't want to do, you had in that Minnesota series, and I know Karl Anthony Towns and Embiid are different players, but you had Dylan guarding Karl Anthony Towns. Put him on Embiid. If you don't want to match Jaren up on Embiid because you're worried about foul trouble, put Dylan on him. I don't know, man. I got so mad watching that game because it was just the same thing. And the ease of which they were making the switch is really what burned me up, because typically when Dylan is coming up to get a screen, like if he's the primary defender, he's trying to get skinny to fight through the screens. But it's just like they get to that point, and they don't even really have to screen. They just run Dylan up there, or they run X or BC up there, and Dylan just kind of falls back onto the other guy. And I'm sure that that's part of the defensive scheme, but it looks awful. It's hard to watch. Mm-hmm. And nothing, like no kind of adjustment. We just watched James Harden kind of do what he wanted to do to finish that game out, and then that's why they lost.
And I was going to say, I hate to pile on Taylor Jenkins, because he's done some great things. We talk about player development. I think this staff is probably tops in the league. But his biggest flaw and the fatal flaw that he might have, as Candace says, if he ends up not being the guy, is 100% in-game adjustments. I say he's like a robot. You plug a program in, and he's programmed to do one thing, and he just never really deviates from that. Every now and then, the Bulls game this year is one where he kind of deviated away. You saw some different things in rotation. He played guys longer, but most of the time, he's going to stick to that same game plan. Whatever, when it's time for guys to rotate out, it doesn't matter what's going on in the game. The other team can be on a 10-0 run. He's still going to take John out of the game. He's going to take Jaren out. You just see this stuff over and over, and you talk about the switches and stuff like that, and I don't understand how they sit there and watch this stuff night in and night out. I mean, you have a full coaching staff, and you see this happening over and over, the same thing. As you said, this is stuff that we've been seeing ever since last year. And they're still doing the same thing, and teams have figured this stuff out. Even the four-quarter Ja Hero ball that we see sometimes, teams have figured that out more. That's not working this year because teams know what's coming. I mean, they just don't make adjustments. And when you get into the playoffs is like a chess match. I mean, if this doesn't work, you switch this up. This team, then they make an adjustment, then you make another adjustment. And Taylor Jenkins just hasn't shown, I don't want to say the ability, but he just hasn't shown that he's willing to do it. Because he has to see this stuff, because we're sitting here watching it. And there's no way that they're not seeing it. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's instructed from the top to do certain things. I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of things that he just doesn't seem to be willing to adjust on. And I even getting Jaren to basketball, we talked about that ever since last year. It's better this year, but still not where it should be for what I think he could bring to this team offensively. I still don't think they get him the ball and take advantage of mismatches the way they should. So that's going to be something that's interesting to watch going forward, because he just, to this point, hasn't shown good to do it. So I don't really expect anything to change now. I mean, I think we've seen enough of it now to say that this is pretty much what he's going to be. And that's not good. I mean, that I don't know if this team can win a championship when you're coaching like that. I just don't think it's possible.
It can't. And you have to have a stacked roster. Like, the front office would have to go all the way in order to overcome that. But here's the thing, and here's what and here's why I make the jump I make, because it's not like I don't like Jenkins. I do. But the reason why I say he can't get the team over the hump is because he won't play the best players. So let's say they make an aggressive trade and they get the best guy. All right, well, if you look at the Philly game, Embiid, Harden, all those guys played more minutes than our best guys.
And they playing 28, 29 minutes. And everybody else playing 35.
Exactly. So what does it matter if the front office makes a huge trade? Let's say they get Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant ain't going to play at this rate. Like, based off what Jenkins has showed us, he does not play his best players, especially when the momentum swings and you need your best players. He's not willing to do that. So it's hard for me to – I could probably get on board with them if he was willing to, when the moment called for it, play his best guys. And he was able to do that last year. That's what confuses me so much. I don't know if he's trying a new approach. If he is, I don't like it. But I really – I mean, I miss the guy who would play. He would play the hot hand all the time last year. It was a thing. And I just don't understand what happened to that, because I think that made a big difference for the Grizzlies last year in terms of wins and losses. And this year, it's just not been that. How many times have we seen Conchar out in the last 3 minutes of a game? Too often, in my opinion. Too often. Just because, you know, then they'll check him out. But by then, like, you've lost momentum. The other team is on a roll. It's frustrating to watch. I know it's supposed to be positive. It's a win, and it is, you know, this is after a win. So I do want to be positive, but that's where I stand on Jenkins. That's my take. I've seen enough at this point. It doesn't seem like it's going
to
change.
Yeah, I would go as far to say I don't know that it's an inability to do it. I think he lacks consistency in doing it, because Isaac mentioned that Bulls game. You see him do it at times. And when he does it, it seems to work, but I don't know if he lacks the confidence to pull the trigger to make those moves. I don't know what it is. Some of it may be inability. I think just consistency is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the players. Go back to the game right before the All-Star break. I know that Jaren had played a long stretch and he was gassed. And I had people giving me crap about that. But in the last 2.5 minutes of the game, your best defensive player was on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Like, call a timeout. Let him sit down and get some rest during the timeout. You've got a week and a half off after this. He can play 35 minutes in this game to help close it. They ended up winning the game anyway. But I was furious. I'm like, if they lose this game because they took Jaren out right there, that's a game that you should not lose. And they didn't. It worked out okay. I was overreacting a little bit. But it's little things like that, you know, it's never a big thing that breaks the back, right? It's the last straw, the last little thing.
Right.
And it seems to be with him that there's just a lot of little things.
I was going to say the weird thing about it is they had more depth last year, so you would have expected it more last year. This year, especially with them kind of being lighter on the bench and not having as much depth, you would definitely think they would play the guys more this year. It's just a weird thing. Like, I don't understand it. As David said, like I said, you go back to that Chicago game and you saw that he did it and it worked in that game. And people get so pissed off, like, when you mention that, like, people that are have a different, like, on the other side of this kind of argument, They'd be like, oh, well, you can't play them 35 minutes. You play them 35 minutes, they're going to get hurt. Everybody else is doing it. These guys are younger than some of these other teams, and they're playing. I mean, I'm not saying you have to play a guy 40 minutes every night, but these guys are young. They can play 34, 35 minutes. You don't have to hold them under 30 minutes every night. Like, that's as a rule, and they kind of tout that like that's a good thing. Like, they talk about it. It's not like it's like something that it just happens. They mention that it's something that they try to do, which doesn't – it just doesn't make any sense to me, especially a team as young as this one. I understand analytics are great for something, but I think sometimes this team, this organization, is a little bit too analytics-based. And I think that's where it comes from. I think it's they look at the numbers and say, okay, well, if the guys you're playing, guys this many minutes a night, they're this percentage higher chance of getting hurt. I think they really look at that kind of stuff. And I think this whole organization from the front office down is plugged into kind of those numbers. And I think that's where it stems from. But it's not, man, especially when I'm not going to say this team is not talented, because they definitely are. I mean, they're number two in the West, everything. But with the way some of these teams have leveled up, I mean, you don't have that talent advantage maybe the same way that you used to. You're going to need to play these guys as much as you can. When it comes to playoffs, these guys are going to play. You don't have the bench pieces that you had even last year, and you're just not going to win games with these guys on the bench. You, in the fourth quarter, you're down, and you got your best defensive player of the year, possible at least candidate at minimum, on the bench. When you're losing, this is not going to cut it. I mean, Josh sitting 5-6 minutes at the start of the fourth quarter, man, these guys got to be on the floor. I mean, it's just not going to work.
And it's pick your moments, right? In the Philly game, that's the time, right? There are some games where you can afford to rest your guys. Like tonight, you know, the Stars played 24 minutes. Y'all played 24 minutes. Bane played 24 minutes. You know, there'll be opportunities that throughout an 82-game season for you to rest your guys. And I'm not saying don't rest them. But when it's a close game and it's in the fourth quarter, play your best guys.
Yeah, you can't stick the same script every night. I mean,
It's not that hard. It's not that difficult, because the way the 82-game season works is you'll have easier opponents down the line, and you can conserve that. And so I'm not saying overwork these guys. I don't think Jaron Bane needs to play, you know, 35-plus minutes a night in general. But I think there are certain nights where it makes sense. And the Philly game was definitely
not 100%.
Where it made sense. And that's where my concern comes in. And like I said, I've seen enough. That's my stance. You can, you know, say what you want to say about it, but my stance is Jenkins isn't going to be able to get them over the hump without an insurmountable amount of roster talent on this team. That's just that's what it would take.
I had a solo show, you guys. I don't know if you listened to it or not, but I don't even remember what game it was after, but I was furious with Jenkins. And I said the same thing. I said, this team will not win a championship with Taylor Jenkins as the head coach.
No.
And I'm not backtracking on that. I still think that that is accurate with the, I guess, unless he makes a massive change, unless he shows some sort of improvement. And if you
they just blowed up roster wise,
kind of that too. But if you look at where, like, you know, Budenholzer is a guy that he was under for a while.
Right.
Budenholzer had a good team in Atlanta that couldn't get over the hump, and then he goes to Milwaukee, and they couldn't get over the hump for a while, and they go out, they add Jrue Holiday, they were able to get over the hump, and so maybe this is like just a stepping stone for Jenkins. He helps his team developmentally. Get them right at the cusp, but can't push them over the edge. And then he goes somewhere else and he's able to get it done. I would love to see him do it here. Obviously, I want the Grizzlies to win a title, and I think that they will. But I just don't believe that Taylor Jenkins is going to be the guy to get that done. And it's for all the reasons that we've mentioned tonight. And it's frustrating, because I think that this roster has the talent. When Adams is healthy, you look at the 10-man rotation, or even cut it down to an 8 or 9-man rotation whenever you get to the playoffs. This 8 or 9-man rotation is pretty damn tough. Mm-hmm. But is Jenkins going to play the guys? And yeah, I know they're going to play more in the playoffs. I know that that is going to happen. But is he going to leave somebody on the bench a little bit too long? Is he going to do something that's going to shoot them in the foot like we've seen him do over and over again in this regular season. And that's a big concern for me.
It is. And then it's, to me, on top of that, it's the late game execution. And I blame the coach. There are a lot of statistics that point to, yeah, I do think that Ja is less effective in the clutch. Bane is less effective in the clutch. But if we're going to be honest, I feel like that's because there's no sets run for them. There's no, in the last five minutes.
The Philly game, going back to that Philly game, that play that he drew up for Bane, like, that was a pretty damn good play.
That's great.
Like
it's what happened afterwards, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it was a rough inning, but like the way he drew that play up, the double screen there in the paint to get Bane had all kinds of space to get that three off. He just didn't knock it down. And so when I see him draw something up like that on a play like that, I'm like, where was that at? It feels like there's been seven games this year that you just inbounded the ball to Ja, or you inbounded the ball to Jaren, and you're like, all right, street ball it, go out there and get me a bucket.
Yeah.
And you didn't draw anything up. It's like, you got stuff in there. Why are you not using it?
Right. It's like that last 5 minutes, it's literally just no sets are ran at all. No motion, no off-ball motion. Like, nobody's setting. There's maybe one screen, and that's it. Like, that's the end of it.
Pick and roll. And right now, with Steven Adams being out, the pick and roll is weak because nobody else really sets a screen the way that Adams does.
I mean, that last 5 minutes of that game, and they weren't getting anything offensively. They were just going down there, just whatever shot they got, just throwing it up. Like, what are you doing?
It's
like, no timeout. Like,
shot.
Yeah, like, you're not going to call a timeout and fix this? Like, it just kept going on and on. And I was like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't understand how you're watching this and just letting this continue. And we've seen it time and time again. That's why they blow these leads, because they get into these modes where they're just, whoever gets the open shot is going up. Like, it's no sets. Nobody's standing in the screens. They're not, people are standing around with their hands on their shorts and their knees. Just nobody moving around. I'm like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do, man. It's rough, man, sometimes to watch. And I don't get it. I don't get it. And it's, like you said, and you see that play, great play drawn up for Desmond Bane. Got a great look, man. I wish on that second look he hadn't hesitated. James Harden wasn't going to block his shot. Like, he kind of hesitated on that second one because he felt like James Harden was going to block his shot or something. He should have just let it fly. And Jaren, I guess, I don't – he probably didn't know the time or whatever. He just ended up putting it up. But, yeah, man, that was a great play to get Desmond Bane open, and you don't see that enough late in game. Like, where was that 2 or 3 minutes before then? Like, I don't know.
It's not there.
This is what's scary about it. Like, you read his pregame quotes, and he's talking about that Philly game. We're still trying to get a good feel. The other night against Philly, we were doing kind of a three-man action involving Ja, X, and Dez. We got two really good looks. Obviously, Ja got downhill, and Embiid made the great block. We're still trying to find out some chemistry. But it's like, when he's responding to this stuff,
it's one new guy on the whole team.
It's like,
what chemistry?
I don't get it.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying. It's too late to be working through chemistry at this point.
Yeah, like, you haven't found chemistry after the All-Star break. You're not going to find it.
Yeah, I'm like, no, man. It's too late to be talking about chemistry. It's 25 games left, man. You're looking for chemistry. That's not what needs to be happening right now. Like,
he's talking about the reads, and
you need to be refining what you're doing by now.
Yeah, and that's
My
I'm holding out hope, and this is probably like the hopeful optimist. This is 100% the hopeful optimist in me, is that Taylor Jenkins is approaching the regular season as a championship coach should. The regular season does not matter that much.
See,
you want to win. You have to get into the playoffs. I understand that. But when it really matters is once you get to the playoffs. And I know, like, that is probably not what's happening, but I want to be hopeful and optimistic.
That's not how it works. you don't get to employ a whole new coaching strategy after games.
Game one.
That's not
game
how
one,
works.
Man. I'm turning to a completely different coach. Game one.
That's not how it works.
Man.
When he does, I'm going to get in here and be on your head. I'm just letting you know. Game one, he's going to do some crazy stuff.
Ain't gonna happen,
no, no. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. We have seen him in the playoffs in game one play like a regular season game.
Yeah.
Started against the Timberwolves. And guess what? They lost. And then Taylor Jenkins made the adjustments. Then, same thing happened in the Warriors series. Game one. Wait. I can't remember if they lost game one or not. But in
those they lost. That's the one they lost by one.
Right, they do not take advantage. So it's not like we've seen anything to the contrary, right? Like, he plays that first game as if he's feeling his way out. And that's not how the playoffs work. And maybe he will adjust that part. I do think that the best optimistic thing that you can do is hope that he's learned from the game ones that he's experienced, because they've been pretty bad, that he can learn from that and grow from that. That's the best, because he's not going to change his approach. Not in the playoffs.
I mean, you want to see your coach making adjustments throughout the playoffs, but last year in the playoffs, it just felt like he was just kind of searching the whole time. Like, it wasn't like it was just, want to see the adjustments made, but it was like they didn't know. You should study your opponent. You should have know more about what you're going to do going into the series than it looked like they knew. It was like adjustments all Minnesota series, adjustments all Golden State series. There's going to be adjustments, but like, not, you shouldn't be doing major things inside. Oh, well, I'm just going to completely take this guy out of the rotation and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. I haven't gone as far as to say that he can't take them there, because I just kind of have a hope that they go out and just add so much talent that they're just so good. But I mean, there's some concerning things with him. I don't think there's any question about that. And anybody that's not willing to say that, they're just a homer. Like, if you don't look at Taylor Jenkins and say there's some major things that need to change, I don't know what you're watching, or you just intentionally being blind to it.
So, Candace, we haven't talked to you since the acquisition of Luke Kennard. He goes 4-for-5 from three tonight. He's shot well from the free throw line when he's got there since he's been to Memphis. What do you think about that move? And I know... I think I know what you're going to say, but were you expecting them to make a bigger move at the trade deadline? And how do you like the acquisition of Luke Kennard?
I love the acquisition. I think it was great. I think Kennard's going to be what they need. It was a good move. Would you have liked to see an additional move on top of that? Yes, I think so. But I was pleased with the fact that they were aggressive, because that was my biggest question going into the trade deadline. Are these guys content? You know what I mean? But they try to go after Kevin Durant. They try to go after Mikal Bridges. They try to go after OG Adeniyi, and the prices were just too high. But maybe not in Kevin Durant's case. In Kevin Durant's case, they only wanted to really entertain a specific team. Right.
Yeah, he wanted to go to Phoenix. That was always going to be the case.
Correct. Yeah. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with their approach to the deadline. And the only thing they can get out of it was Luke Kennard. Would I have liked it to be more? Yes, but I appreciate the mindset, and that gives me comfort going forward. I think the move was great. I really do. You got Luke, you got Bane. Last year, they were, I think, 1 and 2 in terms of the best 3-point shooters in the league. So that's what this team needs. This team needs more shooting. I think Luke Kennard can do a little bit more than shooting. I've been pleased with what I've seen from him on defense. People trash his defense. I think he's held up. I mean, is he a defender? No, but I think he's a net neutral at worst. Right.
He puts in effort on that end. There's no question about that. I mean, you saw even the first game against Boston, he was drawing charges. He tries to get in there and mix it up. I mean, he's not a complete cone. Like, a lot of people kind of put him in a box that he's a complete cone. He's not that.
He's an effort guy, and that's all you can ask for is effort. I like what I saw from him tonight, defensively. And so, absolutely. And then seeing those threes go down, he got 4 threes today. That's beautiful. You know, not a lot of Grizzlies you can say that about. Just lately, that's not a thing. But so, it was a great, I love the acquisition. It was 100% needed, because this team absolutely needed another shooter. It just did. And so we'll see how far that takes them. Here's where I stand on the acquisition. Really, if I thought that the coaching was able to maximize the player's strengths, I think I would be a little bit more optimistic about where this team can go playoff wise than I am right now. I'm a little bit down on it because I don't know that the coaching can really live up to where this talent on the roster is. For example, I don't know if they could take advantage of mismatches the way they should with Jaren Jackson Jr. Those types of things give me, yeah, not as happy about it. But I think Luke Kennard in itself will help this team. And I'm glad he's on this team past just this year. Good move. Good move for them. And I was really excited about it when they announced it.
Yeah, to echo Candace's point, and we've talked about this before when Devin and David talked about Luke Kennard, this is all I wanted from the front office. Mm-hmm. All I wanted them to do was show that they weren't content to just let this play out and whatever happens just happens. Like, identify a weakness and attack that weakness, and that's what they did by acquiring Luke Kennard. You needed more shooting on this team, and they went out and got a shooter. And the fact that they made an attempt at Kevin Durant, as you said, they went out there, OG Anunoby, they went out to Mikal Bridges, and to show that they were willing to make those moves, because before the deadline, I didn't believe that they were willing to make those moves. Like, yep. Going back to the offseason, the moves that they made in the offseason didn't show me that they felt, okay, like last year, we had these injuries in the Warriors series. We feel like if we didn't have these injuries, we possibly could have been in the NBA Finals, even won it. So we need to make sure whatever weaknesses we have going this season, we need to identify those weaknesses and target them. And they didn't do that this summer. Matter of fact, they went the opposite direction and leaned farther into development. So the fact that they, at the deadline, they identified they needed shooting. They felt like we needed to get a bigger wing in here to kind of complete this possibly. The fact that they went out and tried to do that, that makes me feel better about the front office going forward and what their mindset is. I just had a philosophical difference with their mindset coming out of the summer and at the trade deadline. The fact that they made the effort makes me a lot more content with long-term, like what their plan is. I just felt like they were going to continue to slow walk, and it just didn't seem like they cared whether they put their best foot forward. And I felt like, when was that going to happen? Like, and people talk about the windows, and windows close, man. They don't, just because things look great right now doesn't mean it's always going to look the same way. They close quickly. I mean, we've seen other teams, it think when things look great, and then all of a sudden it doesn't look so great anymore. There's always things that happen, injuries, guy could get frustrated and worn out. You just never know what's going to happen. Things don't always work. So the fact that they made the effort leads me to believe that they're going to probably could make a run at another big wing this offseason. So I'm good with where they are.
Yep. Agreed.
So let's stick on the big wing thing here, and let's talk about Zaire. He had a good night last night for the Hustle against the Ignite, 24 points. Crap. I closed the window. Yeah. Like he had a good game.
He had a good game. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even remember what I had his stats up, but I opened something else in the window.
Dribble move, reverse layup.
So let's go. I want you guys to rate this for me. Zero being there's no chance that this happened, and 10 that you're extremely confident that this happens. That we see Zaire in playoff rotation minutes that are effective playoff rotation minutes, man. This year. Where are you guys at on that?
Two.
Okay.
Hey, man, she said a two. Okay. I thought I wasn't optimistic. Two. I was gonna say five. I can see it going either way. It is tough. I mean, you're this point in the season and you haven't seen it. It doesn't give you great thought that it's gonna happen. I just feel like we've seen him play rotation minutes. We've seen him be in the rotation late in the regular season and playing important minutes and being productive. So I can't say, I don't want to say that low. I'll go with five because I think it could go either way. I probably should say four. I'm going to say four because I think it's probably a better chance that it doesn't happen. But I've seen him be productive, so I think there's still a small chance. I don't know if this late in the season you can kind of get him and work him back in to the point to where he's in a playoff rotation. I think that's going to be pretty tough. I'm going to say four.
The reason why the explanation that you used in terms of him getting back and getting confident.
Yeah, because I mean, you only got 20-some games left.
Exactly. So that's why I say two. So it's not like I'm not high on Zaire, because I am. So
yeah.
Let me clarify. I like Zaire, and I think where he's going, I like where he's going. I like that he's developing his game. I believe he should have been in the G League a long time ago so that he could be I would feel better if he was in the G League a long time ago. And at this point in the season, he was beginning to work his way back up into rotation minutes. That would give me confidence that he would be in the playoff rotation and be effective at this time. But part of it is, I think Zaire is mental. It has been. And I think that's been the case for a long time. So let's let him. I think the timeline isn't in his favor for that, basically.
Yeah, they probably they should have sent him down when he first came back. Yeah. When they saw that he was struggling, they let that go on way too long before they decided to send him down. So
I just played that behind the eight ball. Now it's not like I don't feel he's capable, because I do. I just think the timeline to realistically expect that from him. He was extremely confident going into the playoffs last season. He was basically playing starter minutes. So why wouldn't he be? He's coming off of the G League now, and now he's expected to play playoff minutes. I think it's not happening. Not that soon.
Okay, so let me ask another question. Follow up to that question. He's doing good in the G League. Let's say he continues to play down there. He continues to play well. They bring him back up, and you have to choose between him and Conchar to get minutes late in the game. Who do you want the minutes to go to?
Zaire. I'm not big on Conchar, though. So let me clarify. Yeah. Conchar, I'm kind of out on Conchar. So it seems a little contradictory that I would say Zaire, after saying I don't have confidence he'll have playoff minutes. Part of that is based off how I know they're going to do things. They're going to play Conchar over Zaire. So that's the reality of what happens. But my personal preference, I would prefer Zaire's length. I would prefer him at least to be able to bother somebody at the three-point shooting line, because three-point defense is strategically a weakness of their game. But I think that will kill them in the playoffs. And I'd rather have Zaire's length over Conchar. And I'd rather have his I know Conchar will be better at rebounding, but I think they'll have Steven Adams back by then. Hopefully he's able to play in whatever matchup that they're in. And if that's the case, I'd rather have Zaire in his length.
Yeah, I definitely easily Zaire. Like you said, because of his length on the defensive end, even though he's not anywhere near a finished product on that end, just his size and length being that height can bother some people. You can ease a multi-talented defender. You can put him on different guys and he can guard him. And that's something that you can't really do with Conchar. Also, one thing that he, even though he's struggling to shoot the basketball, one thing that he has shown the ability to do is run the floor and get those lobs from Jai. And those are easy baskets. Anytime you can get easy baskets in the playoffs, you definitely take that. So definitely Zaire. It's definitely going to be Conchar, as Candace said. We know how that's going to play out. But if you gave me the choice, it would definitely be Zaire. And that's easy question.
And let me say this too. I think the upside of playing Zaire in the playoffs or playing Conchar, you get far greater dividends too.
Oh, 100%.
That's part of my answer. Like, Conchar is
because they ain't growing. Yeah, right? He's Conchar. That's it.
He is who he is at this point. I think he's grown a lot to this point, and I think he's a good player. I think they play him too much, but I think that he's a good player. But Zaire has a lot of room to grow, and I think those playoff minutes, whatever you give him, especially after him playing in the G League, will be more beneficial for his confidence, for him going into next season, when I think he can really have a little bit more of an impact.
Because they need him to be good. Like, that, they used the number 10 pick on him. They made that trade. I know Steven Adams is why they made that part of it, but they really wanted – they said Zaire was their guy, and they really need him to be productive, because, I mean, you can't miss on a 10th pick, man. That's big if you miss on a pick that high. So this team, especially the way it's constructed, you don't know what happens with Dylan going into the offseason. They really need him to be productive. And as you said, him – playing those type of minutes will be much more valuable for this franchise long term than Conchar. Conchar is a good player. Like, I like him in the role that he should be in. He's in a bigger role than he should be in. That's the big issue with Conchar. Like, I'm not hating on Conchar at all. He comes in, rebounds, plays hard. There are times where he knocks down threes. You just don't need to be in a position where you're depending on him to do these things night in and night out. And that's kind of where they've been. And that was my question going into the season with him. A lot of people were all in on it, and I was like, man, he can do some good things, and we've seen him do some things in spot minutes, but being a rotation player and you're depending on him to be your backup shooting guard, like, I don't think that's going to work out long term. Some nights he's going to look good, some nights he's going to struggle, and that's what we've seen, because he's just playing in a bigger role than he should be playing.
Correct.
I want to take a minute. I want to give X some flowers here for always staying ready.
Man.
You know, and yeah. The Philly game, I felt like X played very well, even though, you know, when they were making the switches late in the game. When I was talking about that, I'm not frustrated with X and BC and their effort on the mm-hmm. defensive end, but your skill set is your skill set. Your lateral quickness is your lateral quickness. Like that, mm-hmm. that stuff is not going to change. It was not from lack of effort from those guys, but it just was not a good matchup for them. And he, you know, he was 6 for 6 from the floor tonight, 12 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. He's doing a good job. He's being a suitable replacement. And I feel like you can just leave him. He could be a guy that's, you know, 15th man on the bench. And then you're like, hey, get in there and get, you know, man, play 20 minutes.
Here's how you call his number. Yeah.
He's just going to be ready. And that is something I feel like I probably value him more than a lot of people do, just because that's not easy to do. It's not easy to sit at the end of the bench and not get any minutes, and then all of a sudden, all right, you're going to play starters minutes, and X stays ready, and he does that. The matchup, like against certain teams, it's going to be bad for you. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think that X does a good job. I like him as a defender. There's been a couple times when he's been switched on guards that he's done a good job, because he does a good job moving his feet, but he's just not fast enough. So
right.
I did want to show him some love. He was a team best plus 25 tonight in the win. So I don't have much of anything else. You guys got anything else you want to go over before we get out of here?
Yeah, I was going to say, to add on to what you said about X, I mean, like you said, man, anytime you call his number, man, he's ready to go. Always seems to have a great attitude. You listen to him talk, man, says all the right things. Like, was okay, asked them to send him down to the G League when they told him that he was probably going to be out of the rotation early in the season. He volunteered as a third-year guy to go down to the G League and play down there. I mean, you're not going to get many guys in his position that's going to do that. And to come in and, like, times completely out of rotation, other times in the rotation, that's hard to do. I mean, that's not easy to not know what your role is going to be, and to be able to come in there and play and perform the way he does when his number's called, man. I give all the respect for him, man. Did a good job on Jokic tonight at times. Played some really, really good defense on him, and being undersized, man, that's not something that's easy to do, man. So he's a good guy, man, to have on your team, have in the locker room, because he definitely has the right attitude. And when it's anytime you have to break that glass, man, he comes in and performs, man. I really, really love X, man. And there were times where you look at this roster, you kind of thinking about making trades, and he's the obvious guy to kind of throw in there for salary filler, just kind of a roster makeup. But I mean, he has a big value for this team. I mean, we've even seen him in the playoffs. I mean, you go back to that game against Golden State for the Grizzlies come out to play and hit that big corner three in that game. I mean, he's come up big in moments and been really valuable for this team. And he plays, I mean, at times has made big plays beyond kind of what his stature is, man. So I have nothing but good things to say about X.
Yeah, let me just, before we close up, give some more flowers to Kennard, because I'll be honest, I didn't say this when we were talking about him, but I expect him to be the Desmond Bane of last year for this team. Because Desmond Bane, the reality is he's playing injured. So he was 1 of 7 from 3 tonight. I think not that that's what you're going to expect. You do expect him to knock down a couple more threes, but I don't think Dez is going to be as efficient of a player as he's been for this team up to this point. Now, I think when he gets his whole toe thing figured out, really fixed, that probably will go back to being the case. But for right now, I'm grateful for Luke Kennard kind of being that efficient, almost you can count on it, kind of three-point shooter player. I think Desmond is runner-up this year, and that's okay. But I'm glad that they made the move. Just want to give some flowers to him. I think he's going to grow a lot with the Memphis Grizzlies, or maybe not grow a lot, but I think he'll be more with the Grizzlies than he was with the Clippers. And I look forward to seeing him do that.
I think Dez gets, you've seen him. He looks gassed, late in these games. I think some of those shots that he missed late in the game, like the Philly game, I think his legs, with him and that toe injury, like mm-hmm. you said, it's thought that he's probably going to have off season surgery. So he's not 100%. I don't think he's even talked about it's a pain tolerance thing. So I'm sure he's going through it at times out there. And Luke and I, one thing with Luke, man, they need to give him the ball even more. There was some times tonight where he was wide open, called for the ball. They kind of looked him off. I tweeted about that. I think he could have a big role on this team, just for floor spacing. Because, I mean, they are so deficient of shot makers, man, that just having a guy like that, that they can knock down shots is big. I mean, you can saw how effortless he was that he was knocking down those threes tonight, man. I'm glad he's on the team. I want them to use him correctly and put him in the right spots, man, because I think he can really help this team, especially in the playoffs. They're going to need that shot maker.
Tonight, one thing that's encouraging to that is both Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard play 24 minutes. So that's encouraging to that point. And I don't know if that'll continue or not, but I like to see that.
Yeah, I don't want to see Dez cut necessarily. I know tonight was more about the score and where the Grizzlies were with the lead, but having Luke around that 24, 25 minute range and maybe see some minutes fall off somewhere else from some of the other guys, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
So he's plus 21 tonight.
Yeah, down the stretch, you're going to have some games where you're really going to be playing to win. And I'm hoping that we do see, okay, you need Kennard in there over Conchar, because Kennard is a capable playmaker. Like he's a guy that, yeah, he can knock down the three, but if you're too aggressive on the closeout, he could take it all off of the dribble as well and create for other guys if necessary. So, you know, like he's not going to be a primary playmaker, but he is a guy that can hold his own whenever it comes to that kind of thing. So
especially if you go back and look at it, he didn't do it so much in L.A., but if you go back and look at his tape in Detroit, he's more than just a shooter. There's other things that he could add to the game other than just shooting.
That's why L.A. gave him the contract, and then, you know, whatever he had to fall
down, they just weren't using him, right?
Or whatever happened. I don't know what happened there, but he just wasn't seeing any time. So it was a good move. They got him for cheap. And I like the move. I love Danny Green. I love his championship pedigree and what he brings to this team. But Danny Green is a skeleton of himself. And in the couple games that you got to see him play,
he looked
old and he looked slow. And maybe that gets better as the season goes on, as he gets into game shape as opposed to just being in shape. But I didn't have any confidence in what Danny Green was going to be able to bring to this team as far as playing. If they were to keep him on this squad to be kind of like a Udonis Haslem type guy, I would have been completely okay with it. But I'm glad that they were able to get somebody that's going to be able to play meaningful rotation minutes down the stretch for them.
Man, he's a good dude. He's a good dude, man. I was just glad to see him get picked up quickly. I didn't know was he going to be a guy that people kind of saw what condition he was in. He was still working out that he might not got picked up this year. And the first thing he did, man, when he signed with Cleveland was thank Memphis, thank the players, thank the coaching staff. Man, he's just a good guy. So I'm glad to see that he still got picked up by a team. And he's playing. Cleveland is playing him. So that's good to see. Sorry, kids.
No, you're good. You're good. I agree with you. Why I was just going to put this. I am so high on the Luke Kennard trade that from a basketball-only perspective, understanding that their relationships, kind of politics, et cetera, from a basketball-only perspective, they might be better off starting Kennard than Bane just because of his injury and because you want to conserve him and because he's just not going to be as efficient this year as he will, I think, moving forward after the surgery when he's healthy. I know they're not going to do that.
My man was 10 for 20 from the field with 25 points against the Sixers, and 50% from the field is not efficient enough for you.
Well, he was 4 for 13 today.
He's not going to be efficient. One game ago, he shot 50% from the field.
Luke Kennard, for all the reasons that you were going to start Bane, right? I think at the beginning of the year, or a lot of the reasons you could start Kennard. It's a wild take. I get it. Unpopular opinion. I understand.
Podcast. This is Candace's last show. Start Luke Kennard over Desmond Bane.
I'm staying out of this one, man.
The guy is a shooter, man. The guy is a shooter.
He is.
The guy can do what? More than shoot, which is exactly what we hope Desmond Bane would do.
I love him, though.
The offseason, love to pick right? Up. That was the hope. We were hoping he could do more off the dribble. We were hoping he could be able to facilitate and play make more, which he showed the ability to do. But if you're trying to conserve Desmond Bane for the playoffs, the better bet would be for him to play less minutes right now.
I know Jenkins
is not going to do that, so it's really a hypothetical. But I'm just saying.
I don't disagree with your mindset there. I'm just giving you a hard time.
It's not going to happen, right? I'm aware. I'm that big on what Kennard can be for this team. He can be the Desmond Bane of last year. Was that he's efficient, efficient shooter with the ability to play make some. That Desmond Bane wasn't playmaking a lot last year, but he could do something off the dribble, and I think Luke Kennard is probably in that category. Right now, every time Desmond Bane goes into the lane, he gets blocked. Seriously.
That happens a lot. The explosive.
Yeah, you could tell in the fourth quarter of the game.
Right.
He just doesn't have the lift that he has early in games. He runs out of gas. I noticed it in the Phillies game in the second half. He wasn't the same guy he was in the first half. You could just easily tell.
Yeah. So, it's not a knock on Bane. I'm huge on Bane. But I'm just saying he's not healthy. And if I were in charge, I'd be more apt, because I think Desmond Bane is a better player than Luke Kennard. But in terms of what's beneficial for Bane in this moment, I'm not sure starter minutes are best for him if you have Luke Kennard on the team. But I get it, it's not happening, and Jenkins isn't that flexible enough. And I understand there are politics that come with it, because I still believe Bane is a part of the core, you know, the big three, really. But I just think if he's not going to be as efficient overall, and if you see him decrease late in games, because in the beginning of the season, he was kind of the closer. John Morant's been bad in the fourth quarter all year. Desmond Bane was the closer before he got hurt. And I think you lose all of that playing him starter minutes. But I get it. I digress. It's not going to happen, but I'm throwing it out there. That's how it wouldn't surprise me for the regular season.
If we see Dez get some rest games, like throughout the second half of the season.
He definitely will.
Yeah.
There's some back-to-backs
left
for sure.
And so that's, I'm good with it. Like, I get the point that you're making, and I do – the point that you're trying to make, I agree with it, but I just – in my mind, I would just have a mental block of starting Luke Kennard over Desmond Bane. Like, what you're saying.
Reputation-wise, I get it.
Yeah, like,
I get it.
And I honestly, like, I think Dez, as far as, like, being a team guy, I think that he would understand it and he would be receptive to it. But, yeah, he'll probably rest, but I don't know if there's any way that ever happens. So.
It's not. It's really not. It's something that I would do. You know, it's something I'm willing to do to shake up the team and get them through the stretch. And I'm not even sure that I do that in the playoffs, because in the playoffs, I don't think that's the best move. I think Bane is a better defender than Luke Kennard is. But
yeah.
I think for the purposes of getting through the regular season to optimize Desmond Bane for the playoffs, it's something to think about, but it's not going to happen. But I felt like I would throw out my take, because that's what we do.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you back for your last show, throwing out crazy stuff. guys, we appreciate you tuning in. You can get this show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I am at NBADWill21.
Oh, I am at Candace. You can find me on Twitter. Sorry, I'm a little rusty, guys. It's been a minute. I'm a little rusty. You can find me at Twitter at CandaceH901. Isaac, take us home.
Yeah, make sure you go over to Ethos Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. We definitely always appreciate that. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA, ISAAC_NBA. Man, Grizzlies have a couple of days off here. They'll be back on Tuesday night, man. Early tip, 6:30. Game was added to TNT, taking on the Lakers at FedEx Forum. So that's always a fun one. Hopefully there's less Laker jerseys in FedEx Forum than usual. I think it's been better over the last few years. It used to be crazy, but it's not bad as it used to be. But now the Lakers are a little bit better. They think they got a non-G League roster now. They probably going to come out of the woodworks a little bit. So there might be a few more there this time, man, but it's always fun. Definitely owe them one. After the way that one went out in the Forum, you had all the stuff with Shannon Sharpe and all that. So it's going to be interesting. There's been some speculation of whether Shannon's going to come here for that game. So that's going to be interesting to watch. So I'm excited for that. But that's been the Ethos Grizzlies podcast for tonight. Man, thank you everybody for tuning in. And until next time, we're gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.